Now, the telephone, what do you think I should do about the telephone?
You can just leave it if it rings. We can stop the tape.
Okay.
All right. Are we ready to begin?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My name is Dawn Funk, and today is April 12, 2007. This interview is being conducted in conjunction with the History Department at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte as part of the Voices of the New South series under the direction of Dr. Karen Flint. I am using the Eterol No. 3 digital recorder. I am here today with Mrs. Daisy Stroud. Mrs. Stroud, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
You're quite welcome.
To begin, can you tell us when you were born and where you grew up?
I was born in Charlotte, North Carolina, and by my birthday, I was born on October the 12th, 1921. And I was born in First Ward in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
Right.
And where is that in conjunction to the Brooklyn neighborhood?
Well, at the time that I was born, the city was divided into wards, mm-hmm. and each ward had their own alderman. And so it's like First Ward, Second Ward, Third Ward, Fourth Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, First Ward was close to Second Ward.
Okay.
I was being born on 7th Street. I was more in what you would call the center city.
Okay.
Of course, Fourth Ward was also, but First Ward was near the center city,
mm-hmm.
and that we call the center city the intersection of Trade and Tryon Street.
Right.
That's the square,
mm-hmm.
and that is the center of Charlotte.
Okay.
And it's also the highest point of Charlotte. That's why we always get so amused when we have a persons come here from Charlotte and they say they're going downtown. They are not going downtown. It's uptown.
That's where uptown came from.
That's right. So anyhow, that way. And so Second Ward was very close enough so that, we could walk. Of course, we walked everywhere, but
mm-hmm.
it was close to First Ward,
okay.
Second Ward.
Okay. And Second
mm-hmm.
Ward is where Brooklyn was.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit where you attended school, starting with elementary and moving
okay.
up?
Well, I went to a school in a school called Alexander Street School
mm-hmm.
because it was on Alexander Street.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we had one high school for the colored then, all of us went to Second Ward High School.
Mm-hmm.
And also in Second Ward, all of the black businesses were concentrated there
mm-hmm.
because it was Brooklyn,
right.
And that's where we would go. And so Second Ward High School was in Second Ward. And so as soon as I finished Alexander Street School, I think I finished the sixth grade there,
mm-hmm.
and then I went to Second Ward.
Okay.
Right.
So Second Ward High School started with 7th grade?
Well, it was supposed to start with the 7th grade, but some years when they had problems maybe with enrollment,
mm-hmm.
we would go. In fact, I think I went to the first year after I left Alexander Street School at a school in the Episcopal Church
mm-hmm.
because there was not room for us there at Second Ward. So at this Episcopal church had a school
mm-hmm.
along with it, and St. Michael's and All Angels. It was an all-black concern, and so I went there, I think I went there in maybe sixth or seventh,
mm-hmm.
and then I went over to Second Ward High School for the completion of it and completed 11th grade.
Okay.
11th grade.
Okay. When did you graduate?
I graduated in 1937.
Okay, and then you went on to college.
Fayetteville State, right.
Okay. So Second Ward must have been a pretty large school to have enrollment problems that you had to go to the Episcopal school.
Oh, yes it did, and also there's something about construction probably at that time.
Was it? Okay.
As maybe more students would come.
Mm-hmm.
In my class, we had 137 students.
Wow.
And the reason we had so many is the students from the outlying county
mm-hmm.
had to come here.
Okay.
So they would, some of them walked
mm-hmm.
and some of them got rides, but there was no busing, so they got here the best way they could.
Mm-hmm.
So like there was no, like, there may be have been Plato Price in all of those schools, but all those schools just went to sixth grade and then had maybe an education like teaching them to do manual work or something, not like a regular high school.
Right.
And so they would come there, and that is why we had 137, I think. Right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the kids who went to the high school from other areas, did they have to qualify to enter, or was everybody able
to
get
in? Yeah, they had to qualify.
What did that entail?
It qualified when they were in the maybe fifth or sixth grade, they had to take an examination.
Okay.
And if they passed the examination, they could go to second ward.
Mm-hmm. Was this for everyone? Did people in second ward have to do this, do you know, or...?
In what do you mean in second ward?
If people were going to say Meyer Street,
you mean like
Street
Alexander
school.
Street, like my school?
Well, your school.
Oh no,
did
that was my school.
Okay, so you did not have to.
It's just
to
because
qualify.
It was county.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
That was a requirement in the county, and so it meant that it was like a big achievement to go to high school. Mm-hmm. And that separated the sheep from the goats, I guess, because the ones, I guess they felt the ones with the most promise would go to second ward and get an education, because we were all taught that education was the key.
Right.
You know, you had education, please, education. And so those that were left behind did not feel so badly, because probably they wanted to be farmers. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. It wouldn't bother them to not go higher in it, you know, in education.
Right. And did you walk to school?
Oh, no busing. Yes,
you,
I walked.
You did do busing.
Yes, and my friends that lived in Biddleville, everybody walked. No
everybody
busing.
Everybody walked.
Right, everybody walked.
So what happened if you got to school late?
You had to go back home.
You had to go back home?
Yes.
Was there a gate?
Yes, it was all gated, and the principal would stand at the gate. He would be about 10 minutes before the time to come in, and he'd stand there, and as soon as he would look at his watch, then he would lock the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And the requirement was you go home and bring your mother back.
Oh, really?
Could not come back.
Mm-hmm.
So you would, the student would walk home and then wait till mother came back. Because they knew what they were going to get. And that was the only admission back at school.
That was the only way you could get back
right.
in.
So it was excellent, because it prompted you to be on time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, regardless, it was snow. I don't care what kind of weather they had. Nothing closed school.
Really?
Nothing.
So a big snowstorm would not shut it down?
Nothing closed school.
Wow. Did that ever happen to you, where you had to go back and get your mother?
No, I didn't do that, because I was the bold one, but scared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would dare to do things, but I was scared to really follow through. I talked more than I talked more than I really acted, because I would not want to. And seeing the example from my brothers and sisters, because I was the youngest. And watching what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no.
So it did happen to them.
Oh, yes. Well, maybe I must have... it was some example I saw given that I did not want there. And my principal was Mr. Grigsby. Mrs. J.E. Grigsby. And so it was a very interesting experience being in high school, not in elementary too.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience with Second Ward?
Well, when I went to Second Ward, it was a sort of thing that it was like it's a requirement that we would do that, and there at Second Ward, you would be given an opportunity to succeed and get up in life. But it's all up to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was all a personal sort of thing.
Right.
And we were told all the time that they set the example for us, and it's up to us to follow it. And so they were very strict.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of talking back or being disrespectful was something that, or maybe if you lost your mind or something, you might do that. But there were not too many problems because we could see the example
right.
being set, whatever it is, because there was no there was no limit to the amount of punishment that could be given.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the principal could whip you just like your mother or father. And,
oh, wow.
And then they would just, when you would get your whipping at school, you'd go home and get another one
mm-hmm.
at
mm-hmm.
night, really. So, I mean, very few times we talk a big mm-hmm. thing, but actually doing it, we were in awe of somebody that, somebody talk back to the teacher, what? You know, that was just loud. Oh, they're crazy. They're crazy and all that stuff. So it was a different time, really. Mm-hmm. Right.
How was the relationship between faculty and the students, between the teachers?
Well, it was one of true respect.
Mm-hmm.
We really respected our teachers and our principal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we would do everything, you know, behind their back, but we respected them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't recall any so-called, like, discipline problems.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know anyone that would dare to do that. I know, you know, as we say, we would talk about what we would like to do, but
mm-hmm.
I can't recall anything because everyone feared going to the office.
Right.
You know, that was not a pleasant thing to think about.
Right.
Because, say, for example, I recall a student was told we could not chewing gum. No, no chewing gum. But somebody had some and thought they had mastered the method of holding it in their mouth and not chewing it.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they relaxed. And that student had to go out and pick up every piece of paper around the school.
Wow.
If you can imagine, just, you know, for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to the office, and then that was a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And they willingly did it. They didn't say, what? They just went, because if they had said, what, then they would have to go home and bring their mother back.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
So did the teachers look out for the students? Did they take a special interest in their success?
Yes, they all had an interest. They all encouraged us,
mm-hmm.
you know, to do whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they set the example of the necessity of education as the education being the key.
Mm-hmm.
And so you did, you know, as well as you could.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and we had a very good time there because we made such good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then the camaraderie of the friends that you had was of such because that was the only school,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you were in probably groups of friends, but you had some of the best friendships there.
Right. Friendships that probably carried on.
Yes, carried
the
on.
Years.
That's true. That's true.
If a student wasn't doing maybe as well as they could, would the teachers talk to your parents? Would the parents get involved somehow? Or would it be really your responsibility to succeed or fail?
Well, as far as I can remember, because I didn't have that experience,
mm-hmm.
I think the teachers would... I think they insisted that the student would do as well as they could do,
mm-hmm.
but I get the idea that they were saying that there are some students that will not do whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
and there are some students that will take longer
mm-hmm.
to get here, so there was no embarrassment or anything.
Right.
You understand? It was not like, you need to do this, you know, mm-hmm. it was like, encouraging and encouraging and encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they saw evidence that they were not doing, they accepted the idea that all students can't do the same.
Mm-hmm.
But when they saw something in a student that they thought needing developing, then they focused on that,
mm-hmm.
on
mm-hmm.
that student. You know, and so the pressure was not... Okay, now where were
we? We were discussing the students that may have needed a little bit more development
And yes. The teachers would take an interest with them and yes. try and get them along.
Yes, I think, say for example, I think the teachers were so intuitive that they saw in the students there those that may be good tailors or some particular craft that they would have, mm-hmm. and that's what they would encourage them to do. And when they saw a student that had probably characteristics of somebody that would go farther, maybe mm-hmm. like a doctor or whatever, mm-hmm. then they functioned on that. But they didn't. They never made the student who was not on that level feel ashamed or right. anything. It was just insisting that they would, you know, follow that path.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore there wasn't any the kind of tension that you have today, mm-hmm. like someone thinking that they're one student thinking that they are better than the other mm-hmm. student. We didn't have that. The only thing we had at school was the same thing that was going on in society mm-hmm. Then, and that is their color.
Right.
Uh-huh. That was the thing that was the main thing that was the determining factor we thought was your color.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but otherwise in school, everybody enjoyed school
mm-hmm.
and loved school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like one big family.
Yeah, that's great.
Right.
What type of courses did they offer?
Well, nothing special. I think they had the two foreign languages you could have, mm-hmm. either French or Latin.
Okay.
And you took the next, like, geography or certain arithmetics. I imagine it's a basic curriculum
mm-hmm.
that we have today that we need. Today, science, some kind of sciences mm-hmm. and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had to do that because when we graduated, then our scores had to, what we took, and it had to be sent off to the universities.
Mm-hmm.
And as I think about it, with that in mind, we probably were put in certain teachers' rooms, mm-hmm. those of us that might have indicated that we would go to education beyond high school.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it was so that we were put in certain classes because if we went to college, then they would ask, we had to be examined
mm-hmm.
on certain math and whatever
okay.
like that. So I imagine that's it. And those that would go into fields like cooking mm-hmm. or sewing, or I imagine that they were developed that way. That's mm-hmm. the way.
And they had those type of courses.
Oh yeah, they had home economics.
Well. Okay.
Home economics. So you had to take either cooking, or so you could choose cooking mm-hmm. or sewing.
And that was just for the girls.
Yes.
Did any boys take those classes, or could they?
I think we had the boys had. What do you call those things like mechanics?
Mm-hmm. Shop.
Shop mm-hmm. like that. Maybe a little later on they might have gone in there, but as I remember, they were all girls in the
mm-hmm.
cooking and all girls in the sewing, and then maybe a manual training or something with the boys.
Okay.
Right. Right.
What about extracurricular activities?
Oh, we had excellent football,
mm-hmm.
basketball, and we had to play out. The yard surrounding the back of it was dirt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the football was played, baseball, basketball,
mm-hmm.
and everything. And so the only, it was mostly intramural because mm-hmm. I can't remember Plato Price or Terrence Lytle when I was there coming and having games to determine which school. I think we evidently played against each other with different
okay.
teams. Maybe the grades, maybe 11th grade, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember having basketball games and football games,
mm-hmm.
but I don't remember anyone traveling in.
To play.
I don't remember that. It could have happened.
So West Charlotte hadn't been built at that time?
No, it hadn't
okay.
been built. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Was there anything like cheerleading or anything?
Yeah, we had cheerleading.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We had cheerleading, and I think what we were doing is we were imitating
mm-hmm.
the white schools, mm-hmm. you know, like I guess we were imitating. If they had football like that, I guess we had football like mm-hmm. that, and we were sort of imitating. We had our colors and mascot and mm-hmm. everything like that. Mm-hmm. So that is the way I think we do that.
Do you remember what your mascot was?
Oh yeah, it's the Second War Tigers.
Oh.
yeah, right. As the Second World War.
So your colors were
blue and white.
Blue and white. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did you, in particular, do any extracurricular activities, or how did you spend your time outside of school?
No, I didn't have any extra. Oh, I was in the choir, choral group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was in the choral group, not the choir. I like music, mm-hmm. and I was in the choral group.
Okay.
Right, I did do that.
How big were these groups? How many students would you have?
I would guess, well, we had levels of choral society. Mm-hmm. It's like the beginners, you know, and then another. But the group that did the performing mm-hmm. had to be in, reach that stage, mm-hmm. you know, so you could go there, the first group, and then when you qualified to go up, and all of us did not pass in there, mm-hmm. you know, you might do that, but when the teacher would find out that we could not sing, we were out of there. But then if we finally made it, mm-hmm. then it was a real accomplishment because we performed in the auditorium.
Oh, wonderful. For the entire student
yes,
body?
Yes, uh-huh. We had chorals every spring. We had a program mm-hmm. with the chorus, and that was a real thing. And then we had, I remember we had, I guess it was a fundraiser. We had dance, mm-hmm. dancing on the stage,
mm-hmm.
and performance of dancing, like, I can't remember ballet, but it was that type thing. Mm-hmm. That was the sort of things that we would have. But mm-hmm. the choral group was a real privilege mm-hmm. to get into the choral group.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You must have had real talent to be able to do that.
Yes, that's right. You had a tryout, and it was a performance because you got your uniforms mm-hmm. and everything, so it was good.
Wonderful.
Right.
Did you have any plays were put on or any theater groups?
Oh, yes,
like that?
We had plays mm-hmm. put on and journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were interested in this particular things, then we used to have plays. And then we would have visitors from colored schools in the area mm-hmm. that would bring their plays, and maybe we'd go there and have our plays there,
oh, wonderful.
Too. Right. So we had some excellent teachers there that would with plays mm-hmm. and everything, right? And the decorum in the auditorium was of such that you had you know, certain seats too. You had assigned seats
mm-hmm.
when it was time for the to assembly.
Mm-hmm.
You had assigned seats, and you would go there and you know where you would sit
mm-hmm.
and you know whatever. It was very you know, very well organized.
Right,
it
sounds very
right.
structured. So,
right.
So everybody knew what they had
That's
to do
right.
and
everybody
how they
knew.
Should behave.
That's right, everybody mm-hmm. knew. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, Second Ward High School, where was that located in Brooklyn? Do you remember what street it was on?
It's on the corner of 2nd Street and, I don't think that's, maybe it's Davidson and Alexander. I don't know, I'll have to look. I know it was 2nd Street and maybe that was, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. But it was on the corner?
Yeah, it was on the corner okay. of 2nd, I know it was 2nd Street, but I don't know this street coming up here. I want to say Alexander Street,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
So you put like a question mark. Yeah, that shouldn't be hard to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
And what was around the school?
Well, across the street was a funeral parlor.
Mm-hmm.
In the corner, there was a funeral parlor on one corner, and then the other corner was a store, a grocery store, and then another corner, it was a store. 2nd Street was was reminiscent of, well, the whole place was reminiscent of Harlem,
mm-hmm.
and all of the black businesses were on Second Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of the black businesses were on Second Street, and well, the black churches were there, most
mm-hmm.
of them.
Okay.
And it was just the place to go,
mm-hmm.
really, and it was just a privilege to go to be on Second Street.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. So,
so did you spend time in Brooklyn outside of school with your friends?
Well, I had one very good friend who lived in Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
but her parents were like my parents. We were kind of sheltered,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, you know, you can pass by there, but you don't need to go. You know, you might look, but
mm-hmm.
some bad things may be
happening, yeah.
or whatever. So we couldn't do that. In fact, really, it was a sign of being grown up
mm-hmm.
to be able to go to Second Street after a party.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would tell my mother, I would say, when am I going to get to go to Second Street?
Mm-hmm.
So she says, I'll let you know. I said, okay. So I thought maybe when I went to the junior senior prom,
mm-hmm.
and by the way, I was escorted, but my sister had to go along as a chaperone.
Really?
Yeah. That's right. My sister, we had a taxi, and the young man came to my house, and my sister sat in the front seat. And then my friend and I, on the way there, my sister sat in the front seat, and my date and I were on the back seat. And coming back, my sister sat with me on the back seat, and on the so-and-so. But anyhow, and then when I didn't get a chance really to go to Second Street
mm-hmm.
Because I was very sheltered.
You were very sheltered.
Right.
So there was no going to...
I was so young, too, because... I graduated when I was from high school when I was 15.
Oh, did you really?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I skipped. I started early, and then I skipped grades, which is terrible, I think. Really.
Mm-hmm. And then you went to college immediately afterwards?
Yeah, I went to college when I went to college. Can you imagine going to college at 15?
That's terrifying.
It was. And I was homesick, and I'd cried every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that was the way it was with me. I didn't get that advantage of, if that's an advantage, of
mm-hmm.
Enjoying Brooklyn.
Right.
And I didn't.
So after you finished with college, did you move back to Charlotte?
I finished with college, yes, and I came back here, and the first year after I graduated, I had a primary certificate.
Mm-hmm.
I could not get a job in Charlotte.
Really?
Because the rule was that, I don't, maybe it's in the white too, but I know in the black, the rule was that only one person out of a family
mm-hmm.
can teach in the schools. And my two sisters
mm-hmm.
were teachers before me.
Oh.
And they were teaching at Second Ward.
Mm-hmm.
My sisters taught at Second Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a privilege for the second teacher to get there. But when the first teacher graduated from North Carolina College,
mm-hmm.
she got a job teaching history. Then when my second other sister graduated, they gave a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
But when I graduated, I couldn't get a job in Charlotte.
Hmm.
So I substituted.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I just went around and substituted for a year.
Okay.
And during that time, my husband-to-be was at Johnson C. Smith because he had to stay out and work for 2 years
mm-hmm.
before he graduated in 1936
mm-hmm.
from Second Ward.
Okay.
But he had no money to go to college, so he worked for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of 2 years, he went to Johnson C. Smith.
Okay.
Right. That's why.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, just check my notes. You grew up in First Ward.
Yes.
How was that community like? What was it like?
Well, I think the community showed was a good example of living in Charlotte at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's because originally, First Ward was to be housed by only those of the Caucasian race.
Okay.
Because it was so close to the center city.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not want colored people living close to the center city.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way colored people would live there is that they would live in what you call shanties, and they would do the domestic work for the whites.
Okay.
Okay. In other words, these are people that were there, but most of them, their aspirations, they knew that they would be nothing but servants of the white.
Mm-hmm.
But it so happened that my father was in insurance, North Carolina Mutual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another story sometime that I have to tell you about my father and my mother, because my mother was a teacher in a one-room class room house.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was a student.
Oh.
And it wasn't the case. I'll tell you that another time. But anyhow, so my mother was favored because, the reason she was favored is that her people, her families, were designated as house Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
So they had privileges because they were working in the house of a white man. They
mm-hmm.
had privileges.
Mm-hmm.
So the master would say any of the children there that he sired,
mm-hmm.
The black children, then he would say that if they indicated a capacity
mm-hmm.
for education, he would pay the bill.
Oh.
So it went down, you
mm-hmm.
know, that way. And it so happened that my mother's mother was favored,
mm-hmm.
and then when my grandmother had my mother, so who was her child,
mm-hmm.
then when she expressed a desire to go to college, then the master sent my mother, asked, what would you like to do? And
mm-hmm.
she said, teach.
Mm-hmm.
So he sent her to Barbara Scotia, right
okay.
up here. And so that's how she got to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, my father was a very enterprising person.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have an education, but he was a striver, and he went up in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyhow, he needed to come to Charlotte, North Carolina. He was going to be promoted to the district manager of the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking for some place to live. And during the same time, in the block that I lived in, that's the 500 block of East 7th Street,
mm-hmm.
There was, across the street, a brick house. And it had a man living in there whose last name was Tate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the rumor has this, and I always say this because I don't want to be sued, but the rumor was that Mr. Tate was the illegitimate child of one of the Tates from Charlotte.
Oh, okay.
And then that family built this house for him.
Mm-hmm.
But when the neighbors in the community that were all white heard about that, and the what happened then was one drop
mm-hmm.
of black blood makes you black. Just
hmm.
one drop. That was the law.
Mm-hmm.
If it's one drop.
Mm-hmm.
And because they say he had this consorting with this woman who had some black blood in it,
mm-hmm.
then he was designated as black. So, but when the neighbors all heard that, they put their homes up for sale.
Mm-hmm.
So my father got that house for a song. Mm-hmm. We had 13 rooms.
Oh, my goodness.
And but the people, they could not stand to be near anyone that had that one. So they put their houses mm-hmm. up for sale because they were deemed to be black people mm-hmm. and Negroes. But anyhow, so I was saying that to say that the block that I lived in, of course, when they moved, it filled up with all black people. Mm-hmm. So the block that I lived, the homes were nice, you know, mm-hmm. and the people that moved in, the parsonage was right next door to me, mm-hmm. and it was a very nice homes. Mm-hmm. But if I went over about one block, then there were a row of houses where black people were the servants of white, mm-hmm. so that was a different, but we were all together.
Right.
You know, so that was the sort of childhood I had over at, over in First Ward.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what held the community together, in your opinion? Was it the
closeness? I think it was the churches.
The churches, okay.
Yeah, I think the churches were very instrumental because everybody went to church. Mm-hmm. And that was you know, school and church.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very, very prevalent in there. And so there was no, as far, of course, on Saturday night, I guess that was the time to relax for mm-hmm. some people, but everybody went to church.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really kept us together.
Right.
Right.
I know you didn't hang out maybe on Second Street too yeah. much, and you went to school at Second mm-hmm. Ward. Do you know anything about what made the Brooklyn community special? Was it the fact that all the businesses were located there? Do you know what other people might have a thought about the Brooklyn community who lived there?
Well, I think I can compare Brooklyn with Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever been to Harlem?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now if you go in its heyday, it's so much pride to live in Harlem,
mm-hmm.
and it was a privilege to live there.
Right.
Uh-huh. And like the black businesses were there, and it was lively and everything, and the churches were there,
mm-hmm.
and so I would say it was a privilege to be there,
mm-hmm.
and I just wanted to go and couldn't go.
You couldn't go?
I couldn't go, but I wanted to go, but they did have, in the theater,
mm-hmm.
we went to the theater.
You did.
The theater was right there
mm-hmm.
in Brooklyn.
Right.
And in fact, we could. It was safe to walk all over Brooklyn at any time. It wasn't the sort of thing that you are afraid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now our parents might have been afraid.
Right.
something, but everybody is everybody over
right.
there, you know. And I think. I really wanted to live in Brooklyn
mm-hmm.
because I admired it. It was like a place that I wanted to go, and my mother wouldn't let me go, so it was just a privilege to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And everything happened in Brooklyn.
Right.
Everything. I mean, it was a city in itself, right? So I'm glad that there was a Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
really.
Now, where were you when Urban Renewal started? Where were you living at the time?
In the 60s, I probably was here. I stayed here, with exception of going to college. After the second year here, and I didn't get a job,
mm-hmm.
I accepted a job in Rockingham, North Carolina.
Okay.
So then after I left Rockingham, I came back to Charlotte, and that's when I got married.
Mm-hmm.
I got married, and I've been in Charlotte ever since. So the majority of my life, I've lived here in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did you hear, when you heard about Urban Renewal and that Brooklyn was going to be torn down, what was your reaction?
Well, I was very hurt
mm-hmm.
because of the promise that was made,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we really believed them, you know, and we just trusted that they would do that. And if someone would say otherwise, you know, we would say, they said it. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. they said that they would not do that. Mm-hmm. And it was a very, very sad, disappointing time mm-hmm. when they decided to just implode it, you know, just get rid of it.
Right.
You know, it really, all of our history and everything was just lost. And in fact, really, the urban renewal that they had, it just destroyed our life.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that the way I have soothed myself is, I guess that's progress. You know? That's what they call progress.
That's what they call progress.
That's what they call it. So if that's their definition of progress, you know, it's, and then they could say, now, suppose we had not done that, Charlotte would not be what it is today. And all these statistics about mm-hmm. Charlotte being, oh, it's way up there, isn't it? It's desirable to come
mm-hmm.
here.
Yeah.
And all of that contributed to it, they would say.
They would say, yes.
Uh-huh, they would say that was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it. That's that.
Now, at first, did they say they weren't going to tear Brooklyn down?
Oh, yes.
They did say that.
Oh, yes.
First.
They promised us the school. No tearing down.
Wow.
They went back on their promise.
Mm-hmm.
They really did.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did they say any parts of Brooklyn? I know some of Brooklyn was considered a slum, blighted areas. Did they mention anything about tearing those houses down and building some more?
Well, I don't think they had to do that. I think with the plans that started,
mm-hmm.
the master plan came out. And when they shared the master plan, they didn't have to worry about all the everything went down then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a sign.
Right.
And then they didn't have to do anything else but except take the bids on. They probably had someone by this office a plan of the future of Second Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would meet and they would go step by step. This has to go and that has to go and that. And so then you see that's what it is over there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting now that they're... said they're going to try to recreate Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Mm-hmm. It can't happen.
They say they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They say they're going to put a high school over there.
Oh, really?
And reminiscent, that's the latest, mm-hmm. reminiscent of Second Ward High School. But it won't be.
No, it's not the same.
It won't be anything mm-hmm. like that, probably. So that era is just gone. And I'm glad that... we have some pictures of it and
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And have you seen that film?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Now, that was good.
Yes.
That was kept. So at least you got... We have that and a lot of others. A lot of my friends, I keep encouraging them to clean out their closets. You know, because sometimes you put things back and because then they close their eyes,
mm-hmm.
their children...
Yeah,
they won't have the same need for it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm trying to do. And I have some things. I think in my moving, I might have lost some things because I have a handwritten letter that my mother wrote about the ills of segregation. And she had to write that probably before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I can't, maybe it'll come up, but all of that is to be very good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did your neighborhood feel any effects from urban renewal other than the emotional ones, probably? Did a lot of people relocate into your area? After
yes. Urban. Yes. What happened with urban removal, as you call it? they encouraged the colored people to move to the west side.
Okay.
That's where most of us moved to
mm-hmm.
the west side, and we were all over there around the university of Johnson C. Smith University,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and farther back over there.
Okay.
And what they did was they built high-class neighborhoods
mm-hmm.
for those of us that had done very well.
Right.
And that's how Hyde Park came in.
Oh, okay.
And Hyde Park was really imitating maybe what would happen in Myers Park.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, big homes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like what you have wanted all your life, but you're all with the black people.
Right.
You know, they're all black. And, of course, I found out later, it was just, what was really ironic was the house that they would build for us in our community
mm-hmm.
would be more than in the white community.
Really?
That's right. It would cost more. Than that, you know, and that to me was ironic, you know, but I think it's because not greed, but it's just like capitalistic
mm-hmm.
society.
Right, they're taking advantage of.
Yeah,
situation.
And I don't think they call it taking advantage.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to make it in this capitalistic
mm-hmm.
world.
Mm-hmm.
That's America. You
mm-hmm.
know, we have capitalism, and they wouldn't say, "Oh, poor people." They want to make money.
Yeah.
And so that's where I accepted it. But it's just ironic
mm-hmm.
that would be there. The ones that had the least were charged the most.
Right.
But there were some fabulous homes, and I guess some of the black people thought, I have made it.
Mm-hmm.
I have achieved.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Hyde Park. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've achieved. So you're there with the big houses and huge lawns. And it took a while before they were able to hire gardeners.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't reach that right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd go there plenty of times and see some of my brothers out there. They were tired, but they had a lot of lawn to cut. But they were happy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way it is now. So that was, so what happened to, with in my case, the reason I left First Ward was as the community started to go down,
mm-hmm.
that is if, as my mother's people and all our friends, when they passed away, then their children would not do what we would do.
Mm-hmm.
Then my mother said, when the last child has graduated, the youngest child has graduated from college,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to move into my dream home.
Mm-hmm.
So when I graduated in college, we moved into a very nice house on Oaklawn Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So so I haven't been back. Yeah, that's how I left the
mm-hmm.
First Ward.
Okay.
Right. So.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Now you have a nonprofit organization. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, what happened was when my husband got ill, and I would go to see him, and the thing that would give him the most pleasure, one of the things, I think, yeah, maybe this is a little bit more, is to say anything about Johnson C. Smith University.
Mm-hmm.
He loves Johnson C. Smith University.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I think right under that would be York Road. He started York Road High School.
Did he?
Which is now Kennedy. And then West Charlotte. They're kind of close, but he loves Johnson C. Smith, and he loves it so much that he, even after he graduated,
mm-hmm.
he was always there to help Johnson C. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, have you ever been around people that if you ever with them for a certain length of time, it was almost a miracle if something didn't come up.
Because right.
he loved Johnson C. Smith because he always said that Johnson C. Smith did so much for him
mm-hmm.
because he was a poor person, and with the help of somebody, he was able to get something that Johnson C. Smith he couldn't have gotten. So he loved it. And
mm-hmm.
so when he graduated and came out of the Army and everything, and we were here, and they offered him a job teaching there when
mm-hmm.
he got out of the Army. and got his he got his first master's from University of Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and so in marketing and management,
mm-hmm.
and they were not hiring blacks at that time, so he had to take care of us because I had my baby, first baby.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, he went into education and he worked at Johnson C. Smith. But to think about Johnson C. Smith, they offered him the job. He taught economics, mm-hmm. His field, but they didn't pay anything at Johnson C. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when he went to New York University and got a degree in education. But he always felt that Johnson C. Smith had done so much for him. So when he got his job in education, he did everything for Johnson C. Smith. He established Friends of Johnson C. Smith,
okay.
the community, and all these different things. And he promoted Johnson C. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his love, Johnson C. Smith. So I thought when I go visit him and we talk about Johnson C. Smith,
mm-hmm.
I thought that it would be thinking about his plight when he went to Johnson C. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about the possibility and maybe a probability that there are young people out there like he
mm-hmm.
was, that no money,
right.
but really they have no money, but they're capable, their capabilities and everything, but they don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to myself, now wouldn't it be nice to have a vehicle where we can say to the young people that there is a way to go to Johnson C. Smith mm-hmm. University. And then you would be following the footsteps of Gerson Stroud, who walked. He walked, at first year, he walked from Third Ward to mm-hmm. Johnson C. Smith every day. And then, of course, I think he got there maybe the second or third year in the mm-hmm. dormitory. But my husband never asked his parents for one penny.
Really?
Nothing. He always did. But anyhow, so he felt it was such a privilege that he would go there,
mm-hmm.
that he promoted. And I was thinking that there may be some other students out there, you know, that could benefit from Johnson C. Smith, because mm-hmm. it is not cheap to go to Johnson. It's a private school.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's not a state school. And it's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking that maybe in his name, maybe there are some students out there who would be like him and could get an education
mm-hmm.
like he did.
Mm-hmm.
So I called around and I asked about establishing, what should I do? I asked some of my friends, and I'm a very good friend of Harvey Gantt, is a very good friend of mine. And anyhow, I talked to him, and I also talked to Mel Watt, who's up there in the senator. But anyhow, as I talked about it, I said, I want to start something. So I said, I know what I do. I went to Johnson C. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what would be a way that I could have tax deductibility
mm-hmm.
and have programs or something and let it be in Gerson's name
mm-hmm.
to go to Johnson C. Smith? So they said you have to have a 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, can I use yours? And they said, no. And I said, why? And they said, if we let you use it,
mm-hmm.
all of the everybody, and that makes sense.
Right.
So they said, well, you do, you start one.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, I want a 501c3. So someone said, why don't you start a foundation?
Mm-hmm.
So when I asked my friends, they told me that the experience they've had with women starting foundations,
mm-hmm.
these are the characteristics of the women that they know.
Mm-hmm.
First, they're rich.
Mm-hmm.
They have plenty of money.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anything to do. And they're bored. And being so bored, they said, well, we'll just start a foundation. And our name will be in perpetuity. So what they do, they start a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start it with maybe $25,000. But their name's out there.
Right.
You know, they live forever. So then my friend said, you don't fit any of those characteristics. And so I said, I've got to do it. So They said, okay, they referred me to the Foundation of the Carolinas.
Mm-hmm.
I went there. So they said, how much money do you have to put down?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I was looking for money. So they said, well, the least we can do for you, and we're, this is a favor to you, you have to give us $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give us $5,000. If you give us $5,000, we will at least instigate your getting the 501c3. But I have to get it, but they would put me in line for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back, and then I said, I looked at my finances, and I thought about my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Who was ill, and in order to give him the excellent care, the facilities go up
mm-hmm.
every month. No one knows how expensive it is
mm-hmm.
to have your a loved one in a facility like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it went up every month.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent care. So I said, I don't have that $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, what am I going to do? And all that stuff. So I said, I went to Harvey Gantt.
Mm-hmm.
And Harvey said, the only way you can do that is that you need to enlist the help of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, sit down and think. So now, who are those persons out there that would say, I am who I am
mm-hmm.
because of Gerson Stroud,
mm-hmm.
or I am who I am because of Daisy Stroud,
mm-hmm.
and write their names down.
Mm-hmm.
Then write them and say to them that you're interested in doing that and you want their help. This is a way they can give back.
Right.
So then I put it, the Gerson L. and Daisy Spears Foundation and Friends of the Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they got to be. So I called Friends, and the number was long, but it diminished. It was long, but at the end, it went down low like that. But no, it's okay. But anyhow, that's how I happened to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they volunteered their time and everything. And so I thought about it. I said, we've got to have something that will be an eye catcher and something that's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And so God just spoke to me, and as he does all the time. And I was visiting my husband one Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a friend in California, and her name is Jacqueline Harrison, and she's a renowned composer.
Mm-hmm.
She writes, composes for a lot of operatic stars, and
mm-hmm.
She used to be his music teacher at York Road,
mm-hmm.
but now she has arisen, and she's well known all over. And so I called her, and so I said, Jackie, she says, what are you doing, Daisy? I said, I'm sitting up here talking to Gerson. I said, would you like to speak to him? So she says, can he speak on the phone?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the rumor would be when he's in a facility
mm-hmm.
that he can't do anything.
Right.
You know, that's what. And so she says, can he speak on the phone?
Mm-hmm.
I said, would you like to speak to him? Anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, I said, Gerson, this is Jackie. He says, hello, Jackie, how are you doing? And he was just talking and talking and talking. And she said, so he said to me, Jackie wants to speak to
mm-hmm.
you, talking to me. So she said, Daisy, why didn't you tell me he could talk like that? I said, well, you never asked me. But anyhow, she said, Daisy, I want to do something for him.
Mm-hmm.
So you do, she says. She says, how about it? How about if I come to Charlotte and he give a recital for
mm-hmm.
him? I said, oh, that would really be fantastic. Because she was the first Black Woman of the Year, Charlotte
really?
Woman of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, her calendar is full and everything. And she says, better than that, she says, I know two other young ladies, and they are related to me. They were born in Charlotte,
mm-hmm.
went to public schools in Charlotte. One is in the field of opera.
Uh-huh.
The other is in the field of healing music. and I'm in composing, and she says, I'm going to work on getting them to come to Charlotte to have a recital program for them. Mm-hmm. So they all came, and it was called Three Daughters from Charlotte Return.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at the, everything just worked in my favor. I called the First Presbyterian Church, and they said if you have 501c3, if you're trying, mm-hmm. you can get it cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read in the paper about the Imaginon.
Right.
So I said, that's where I want it to be. So I called, and they said, you know, it won't be completed, I think they said, you know, maybe about, this was in the summer, so mm-hmm. it'll be completed in maybe December or something, mm-hmm. and everything. But I told them what I was about, so they said, you'll have to call the public library.
Mm-hmm.
But she says, they don't do 501c3 mm-hmm. things. That's what they told me.
Mm-hmm.
He says, that they don't do 501c3 at the public library.
Right.
But we don't know what they would do at the Imaginon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I said, okay. So I said, all right. So I'm very close to the persons at the Museum of the New South.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called them, and so I told them I want them to speak in my stead.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they referred me to the person who's in charge of it. Of setting it up,
mm-hmm.
and so they told me that yes, I could go there, and it would be tax deductible.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
so we had it there on February 28th of last year,
mm-hmm.
and it was like Three Daughters from Charlotte Return, mm-hmm. and it was a wonderful concert.
I bet.
And so I made that money, and then I gave $5,000 to Johnson C. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Now this year. Is Fayetteville,
mm-hmm.
and I already have in mind. Some fundraiser for Fayetteville.
That's wonderful.
Right. Yes, I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so, can you tell us a little bit about the motto? It's helping others because others helped us.
Yeah, I did that because I thought of my husband.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the help that my husband got. Was so spectacular,
mm-hmm.
that it's just imperative that we need to help others too,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and that's what I look at. I always think about the benefits that we got from being helped to go to school, and I keep him in mind, mm-hmm. because his parents were not educated as such, but. They exemplified what you can do, and if you're determined to do it, you know, mm-hmm. you can reach a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And because I know personally of the help that he got, mm-hmm. I said it would be so wonderful, because I just believe out there, there are some students that really need help,
mm-hmm.
and they just don't have it.
That's right.
So then that's why I set it up there, mm-hmm. At Johnson C. Smith.
That's wonderful.
And then my daughter, I found out yesterday, my daughter, I have two sons and a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter that followed my footsteps in teaching, she was selected as the most distinguished teacher of the year.
Wonderful.
In Alexandria, Virginia. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing. She. Mm-hmm. She wanted to be in primary education like I was, and so she was selected, and she's going to be honored in one of the country clubs up there. So.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I think
that's
so
wonderful.
Too. Right, right. So I'm going to dedicate the first scholarship at Fayetteville to her.
Mm.
Right.
That's so nice.
Right, that's true.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you would like to discuss that maybe I haven't asked?
No, I never would have thought of saying that if you hadn't asked me. That never even thinks of it. I never even thought about you saying that. You know, I don't. don't know, maybe you could add, I don't know what else.
Well, mm-hmm. I have nothing else. Mm-hmm. So I guess this concludes the interview. Thank you so much for your time.
So do you think that what I've said has been about what you possibly were looking
definitely.
For?
Definitely. Definitely. You've mentioned so much about the school and the workings and the Brooklyn community.
Okay.
It's definitely what we were looking for.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you know maybe of anyone else? You said your sister's...